If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
In any business, people are the key, right? Having the right people in place is what's going to allow you to grow and scale.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Ken Wimberly has over 15 different streams of income from real estate investments, operating businesses, coaching services, and oil and gas holdings. He's a founding member of Laundry Love, a chain of laundromats with a mission to educate, equip, and inspire those in the communities where they serve. He is the founder and CVO of KW Net Lease Advisors, a commercial real estate brokerage firm headquartered in Fort Worth, Texas. Ken, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Man, this is great. This is great. I'm excited to jump in today. Obviously, you have a long and a deep bench of experience to bring to the table, especially as it pertains to retail, triple net leases, things like that. You know, one of the typical flow of the show is where'd you start, where are you now, and how'd you get there? But I know that we have a lot to cover today. And so with a very short time, I want to kind of, if we can, focus a little bit on the retail side. If you can tell us kind of what those leases looked like, give us the history of that business and where you see it going. And then we'll jump into the second segment of the show, which is really more on your philanthropic and charitable endeavors. Sound good?
You bet.
Awesome, man. Well, the floor is yours.
Well, I've been in the commercial real estate brokerage space for the past 20 years, and specifically in the net lease investments world, primarily in retail and healthcare in net lease investments since 2011, 2012. So going on 9-10 years now in that space. So many years ago, it's even still today, a lot of people aren't quite familiar with what a net lease investment is.
Can you define that for us?
Yeah. So when we talk net lease investments or triple net investments, when we say that, the triple nets refer to taxes, insurance, and maintenance. Mm-hmm. So those are costs that every property has on it, right? And in, let's say, an apartment building or, you know, a mom and pop industrial building, something like that, the taxes, the insurance, the maintenance will be paid by the owner or the landlord of that building.
Right.
Whereas in this type of asset, on what we call a triple net or net lease investment, some or all of those expenses are going to be paid by the tenant. And in what we call an absolute triple net, then the tenant actually, they write the check directly to the, oftentimes to the taxing jurisdiction, to the insurance, to the body right there. And they pay all of the expenses out of pocket. So for a landlord, it's sometimes called mailbox money. It's a check that just shows up in your mailbox, or in today's time, it gets wired directly to your bank account. And there's very, very, very little that one has to do as an owner of those properties, unless you're coming up on lease renewal right there.
Sure.
And it's the tenants that are handling the bulk of everything.
That's interesting. And in that, I would assume that your returns on investments like that are probably lower just because there's lower risk.
Yeah, no? They're sold on a cap rate. So typically a capitalization of year one income right there. And yeah, depending on a number of factors, but if you're buying a well-located, longer lease term, you know, 10, 15, 20-year lease term with a nice, you know, well-rated tenant, it's going to be a low cap rate on there. So maybe, you know, today you're looking at as low as a 3.5 cap for maybe like a Chick-fil-A or McDonald's type thing out there to, you know, if you're buying a dollar store type asset in there. So maybe you're at a 6.5 to 7 cap somewhere in there for dollar parts or auto parts store right there. And depending on the length of the lease, location, and a few other factors right there. But so from that, let's call it 4 to 7%.
Sure.
Return on investment right there.
Who wants something like that? Like for the savvy real estate investor, I mean, that just, especially triple net where there's not, you know, any major upside. You know, you can't value add on that. There's not ways to improve the value of the property beyond the lease itself. So yeah. What's the investor profile that's looking for that sort of investment?
Typically high net worth individuals have, you know, lots of capital, or another real obvious one would be someone that, you know, has spent their life building a great big multifamily portfolio, right? They started with a four unit and slowly built that into a portfolio of 1,000 units right there. And they've, you know, sweat equity and effort have built a massive business and a massive cash flow and a massive net worth. One day they wake up and say, man, this is a lot of work.
Right.
I've built this great portfolio in here. It's still a lot of work.
Sure.
And it's often we get clients that come from selling a portfolio of those type of assets and come and say, this is what I want now. I want to buy some triple net, hands-off investments and enjoy the fruits of my labor right here. Have steady cash flow coming in, secure assets, good location. And just, you know, I don't need the high returns that I once had right there because it was my equity. It was my sweat that got put into that a lot. And now I'll take a lower return, but a whole lot less headache.
Right, right. How does someone account for, and this is more of an economics question, but how does someone account for inflation in leases like this?
Yeah, ideally with increases in the leases, with bumps in the leases. So a lot of the healthcare assets that we're talking about, they'll have, you know, 1-2% annual increases in those leases. A lot of the retails, their increases will be based on 5-year increments typically. And so maybe there's a 10-year bump every 5 years right there.
Gotcha. So it's not tracking necessarily the published inflation rate or anything of that sort. It's just tracking hey, this is the predefined amount of, you know, money that we're building into the raises.
You'll rarely see them track an inflation rate, you know, like be tied to an inflation rate. Typically they're predefined in the lease.
Gotcha. Let's talk, if we can, you know, kind of splitting the subjects here, because I know you said that, you know, you mentioned stores like Dollar Tree and places like that. Let's talk the difference between that and, say, healthcare. Have you seen any, you know, changes in both of those kind of investments? You know, what's the difference in those, I guess, going forward? What's your outlook on that? Because I would think that one, you know, probably is suffering quite a bit and the other probably is doing just fine. But I'd love to hear your thoughts.
It's interesting. I mean, healthcare is a huge demand, clearly, right now. And so healthcare continues to do quite well. Now they took some types of healthcare took a hit early, but I mean, right now it's an in-demand asset. But the flip side is, guess what? Dollar stores, they were in-demand essential businesses right there, and they continue to thrive. The major dollar store players continue to put lots of new assets on the ground, renewing, extending leases, and it remains a really, really hot asset class. The beauty of the dollar stores is that for newer entrants into the asset class, those are one of the lower price points that folks can get into. So the dollar store, you can get into it in that, you know, $1-3 million range in there. So some of the healthcare assets can get huge, clearly. Right. But dollar stores and auto parts stores, those are, you know, for us, a lot of the new entrants into the triple net market initially start looking at things like dollar stores, auto parts, and maybe fast food restaurants, smaller things right there. The nice thing about dollar stores is their rent per square foot is typically very reasonable and in range with the market. Whereas sometimes on a fast food location, I think Starbucks and other major national fast food, a lot of times some of their FF&E gets rolled into the finish out, gets rolled into the rent cost on those things, and they're paying considerably higher than what market rent would be if they happen to vacate the building. So some things to pay attention to. Actually, I'll make sure and have it included in the show notes. I wrote a white paper about investing in triple net assets and things to pay attention to, some gotchas and ahas and things to pay attention to when you're looking at that type of asset class.
Yes, would love that. Would love that. So yeah, if you're listening to this, look for that there in the show notes, because I'm sure we can learn, you know, quite a bit as it pertains to that. What are some net leases that you would not recommend someone invest in now?
Oh, how about some of the one that comes straight to mind right now are the like bounce house, the
Chuck E. Cheese's or things like that. Is that kind of what you're?
Well, I know like the Urban Airs and the offshoots of all the Air Jumps and the Urban Airs and those kind of things. I've seen those at a lot of risk. Something that was all the rage a number of years ago, and that, you know, time showed the fallacy in that, was the and it's in the healthcare, but the freestanding ER clinics, right? The urgent cares, so there's freestanding urgent care clinics. Mm-hmm. Those have done quite well, and many of the hospital chains have gone and bought those. So now you've got hospital credit behind these urgent care facilities.
Right.
But there was a big rage for a bunch of years for the freestanding ERs. So the theory, you don't have to go wait at the hospital and the ER. You can just come to this little convenient place right here. The landscape is littered with vacant freestanding emergency room departments right now. Unfortunately, a lot of folks bought into those at a very, very high price per square foot and a rent per square foot on there, so that there is virtually no way to recover from the loss that they're experiencing. It's just, it's a write down in a massive way.
Now, that's a write down for the investor, for the land
for the investor. Now for the investor. So typically those were developed by a developer specifically for the emergency room group. The investor goes and sells those on the market to triple net investors. A lot of that money came out of California, selling from super low cap rate deals in California, moving money into Texas and other assets right there. And unfortunately, within 2 to 3 years, many of those assets ended up faltering and going dark and going bankrupt.
So gotcha.
That when they file bankruptcy, they're out of luck.
Right. That was going to be my question, because, if you have a tenant or a credit rated tenant or somebody behind that, it seems like they would want to continue to pay, but I guess.
100%, if you had, hospital credit behind it, it could be a great thing. You continue getting paid. But with a lot of these, they were doctors groups that assembled and said, hey, we're going to go make a bunch of money doing this kind of thing. And the world turned on them and now they're dark.
Right. And repurposing those assets has got to be next to impossible.
In the article I wrote, there's a great little photo of a repurposed asset that gives you kind of an example on some stuff.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, yeah. Buyer beware. That's for sure. Hey, let's transition here, because I know you've obviously enjoyed success in your real estate brokerage in the net lease environment. But where are you now, and what's kind of your charitable and philanthropic outreach look like for you now? Because I know this is kind of one of your primary focuses.
Yeah, today, so we still do some net lease brokerage. At one time, I had a large company in the net lease world doing 100 plus million in volume each year, and we've scaled that back dramatically as my efforts have kind of focused on some other things. So for the last few years, much of my time has been spent in the love world. And I say that because I have two companies with the word love in the title. And one is our laundromat called Laundry Love, and it's L-U-V, love. And our laundromat is a mission-based laundromat, meaning that it is for profit, but it's mission-based. We know that we can do good by doing good. And so we have large store format laundromat. It's generally between 5,000 and 6,500 square foot, brand new machines, high efficiency machines. We have staffed locations, really well lit, TVs up throughout the store, and our TVs will only play specific programming on the TVs, meaning it's positive. It's things that we want folks to see or hear. So maybe it's HGTV or certainly some sports things on there, Disney Channel, family friendly stuff, but no daytime TV, no news, no junk on our TVs right there. Then we have a designated children's play area and children's reading area in each one of our stores. And next to that, we have large picnic tables in our store for families to come sit, bring food in, sit down, enjoy themselves, and relax while their laundry is being taken care of right there. So that's Laundry Love. And we opened up in West Texas with our first. Now we're in process to open about four more right now.
Wow. So what does that bring your store count to total then?
We'll be at five by the end of this year.
Okay. That's fantastic. Talk to us about the, how did you come up with this idea? How did you implement it? Like, where did this come from?
It came from a real estate deal is where the idea came from. We had a shopping center and we were looking for a tenant in a shopping center, and ended up talking to a laundromat group at a real estate conference. And showed them the site. They got back to us. They said, this is like, we ran the numbers. This is a perfect site for a laundromat. And so great. Come be a tenant. We'd love to have you in here.
Sure.
And I later realized was that they were not a tenant. They were a distributor that I was talking to. And I didn't know what a laundry distributor was versus a laundry tenant or any of that
sure.
at the time. And So they said, let me see if we can find an operator for that market. And they couldn't find an operator. And during the time when they were looking, I was talking with a partner of mine and said, what if we got into that business? And that started us down a fairly long road of about a year of due diligence and bringing in a third partner who is our managing operating partner and becoming what's now Laundry Love. And the three of us said, look, the economics looked great. Yeah. But the three of us said, look, we don't want to just be in the laundromat business. We want to be in the kind of giving back community building business. And so that's what we kind of came up with the concept for Laundry Love and the concept for the family and children's play area. In addition to that, the big picnic tables are there so that, you know, during non-weird COVID times, we can actually host events in there. We'll bring it in maybe healthcare providers that talk to people about, you know, prostate and breast cancer awareness and those kind of things that maybe they're not hearing in their normal communities right there or during tax time, bringing tax advisors in to help people to take care of their taxes and little things like that to be an asset in the community.
Right. And I would imagine that the people you're serving is typically an underserved demographic.
100%. It's, you know, for the most part, our primary customer is lower income and very much an underserved. And that's one of the things that we have been so intentional about with our staff is training our staff that every single person that comes through that door is worthy and worthy of your respect. Mm-hmm. And so we want our folks to treat each person that comes in with great respect. And you can go look at our Google reviews. They're pretty phenomenal from teaching our people how to treat other folks.
Right, right. That's awesome. Talk to us about the programming side of that. I mean, that's got to be, you know, as you've developed businesses and yeah. I mean, that's got to take up a lot of time. So how have you been able to, especially with five stores, scale that amount of programming, that amount of, you know, bringing people in and, you know, doing tax consulting and healthcare providers and things like that. Like that's got to take a lot of work to get that even set up and even publicized.
It does. And someone to tell you is somewhat aspirational. Like we just opened last year with our first store. And so the tax consulting, the health stuff, COVID comes along and puts a wrench into that. It's very much in our roadmap that's going to be part of what we're doing. Yeah. But we absolutely have the children's reading area. We had partnered with a local university and had their students coming in every Saturday and Sunday to read to the kids. And that got shut down with COVID, but that will get reinstituted as we get back to normal as well. I mentioned that one partner and I brought in another partner before we launched, and he is our operational and managing partner. So we have weekly meetings together. We jump on a Zoom every week and meet together, but our managing partner and his team is responsible for the execution and operations.
Right. And I think that's no matter if we're talking about laundromats or commercial real estate, what you've done there is one of the keys, I think, to scaling. Is bringing on people and partners that can handle the operational side of things or do, you know, finding ways to delegate those tasks to other people.
In any business, people are the key, right? Having the right people in place is what's going to allow you to grow and scale.
Right. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. Ken, let's jump into the final four here if we can. If you were to take everything that you know, distill it down to one piece of advice, and you're giving it to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
I guess the one piece of advice would be to take action, and the follow-up to that would be continuously educate yourself.
Right. That's good. When it comes to investing in yourself, what's one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
I am a voracious reader. I read 10 pages every morning, physically hard copy. And then I'm listening to Audible books. Anytime I'm in my car, I'm listening to either Audible books or podcasts. So I'm always learning. And it is amazing how many connections I've developed from the podcasts that I've listened to.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, I literally picked up the phone after hearing someone on a podcast and called them and developed relationships with them because I'm like, oh my God, what you said spoke to me. And now, in fact, one of my partners in the Legacy of Love business is there because of a podcast. I heard him on a podcast. I picked up the phone. I called him. I was like, I think we need what your company does. We started a relationship from there, and then he's become one of my business partners.
Right. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And I think you've already answered this, but when it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Yeah, Laundry Love is one, but I think the biggest thing I'm doing is growing Legacy of Love, which is our parent-to-child journaling app. And this is going to allow us to help millions of parents around the world to save moments, memories, and lessons that they can pass on to future generations. And they can do it easily, digitally, right from their phone, quick to do. and then pass those on. So I've been journaling to my children for the past 18 years, and it's going to be my gift to each one of them at high school graduation. And so we created this program so that others can do the same thing.
Right. That's fascinating. Now, and is that app something that's currently live, or is that in development?
No, it's live. You can go Legacy of Love, the Legacy of Love app. It's available on Android and iPhone. So on either app store right now.
Right. And that's L-O-V-E, right?
Yeah. Legacy of Love is L-O-V-E. Laundry Love was L-U-V.
Got it. Okay. Cool. And Ken, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Come check us out on probably our Instagram, Legacy of Love app Instagram page is going to be the best way to kind of connect with me and DM me. Because if it's not me watching it, one of our team will be on there and will get in touch with me for sure and connect us.
That's awesome. Ken, thanks so much for your time today. I certainly appreciate it.
Sam, great to be here. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.